really happy to be here and be introduced by a former police chief. Makes me a little nervous. I'm not a brought in person. I want to tell you that I have a real connection to the city of Hudson. I also feel ancient. But in the 60s, I worked at the Hudson Training School for Girls. And then later, up until the year 2000, I was working at, or volunteering really, at the Hudson Correctional Facility, dealing with people who were about to be released so that when they came back in the community, they would have some understanding of what they needed to do to become employed. And I did that until the state of New York said that I could no longer go into the prisons. They banned me from the prisons because they said that I was a threat to the safety and security of 72,000 prisoners and something, I don't know how many, 25, 30,000 workers in the system. And I looked at myself, I'm only 5'2" and 123 pounds. I've never understood that. But they're still scared of me, and they won't let me back in. So, unfortunately, I'm not quite sure why I'm here, because I've been listening to all these wonderful people, and they've said everything. They've noticed what's wrong with many of the institutions in our communities. They have ideas about how to correct them. And I know we're going to have a discussion. Are we still going to have a discussion on this, Quentin? Okay. So I know in the interest of time, I'm going to sort of summarize what I was going to say. But I do want to thank Quentin for inviting me to be here. I consider this a real honor to be invited into Hudson again. And I hope you don't send me out. Already, I've noticed something that's really important about the new Social Justice Center, and that is they decided to let all of these wonderful people talk before having a keynote speaker. And I think that's great, because I've sat here and I've gotten so much from them, and we've got to change the way we do business, because in most of these programs, someone has a keynote speaker, they say something, and then by the time the community has something to say, they said, oh, we're out of time. So congratulations, you've recognized something that's really important. Even though I'm here to celebrate this really, I think, joyful occasion that we now have a social justice center in Hudson, and I hope that I can talk a little bit more about why I think the Justice Center, Social Justice Center, is off to a great start. But I do have to tell you, after looking at what is going on in our communities and across the country, that we as African American people and the rest of our communities have a real problem. And we're not acknowledging it. We're not rising to the occasion. I really like what one of the speakers said in terms of giving people assignments. I think that's very important, because we're not doing anything about all these issues that have been brought to us by all of these people. We've talked about it for a long time, and someone said, I'm tired of the rhetoric. What do we do about it? And that's the big question. So what I've been doing lately is looking at trying to get a sense of the status of African Americans in this country and where we need to go. And I've called upon two people who've been really helpful to me. One of them is someone by the name of Michelle Alexander. And I think people have heard me talk about her before, because she really has caused us to take notice in a very serious kind of way of what the problem is in our communities and what we need to do about it. And she, if you haven't read her book, and I hope some of you have, the book is The New Jim Crow, which is Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. And what she basically says is that after all that's been said and done, if we look at the history, what we're doing now is that we're continuing to create a caste system as a result of the policy of the war on drugs and mass incarceration. We've gone backwards. We've totally destroyed many of the gains that were made during the civil rights movement. So now it becomes okay to discriminate. It's legitimate. It's legal to discriminate against a whole section of our communities because they have a felony conviction. Not only does that affect the individual, but it affects our families and our children. They're being destroyed. And if you think that's an over exaggeration, I could take you to many places that will show you that it's real and that's a reality. And what she says we need to do about it is that we first of all need to understand the scope of the problem. Because many of us, and if I ask you to raise your hand, I'm sure many of you, especially if you're African American, will say, yes, I have a friend, I have a son, I have a daughter, I have a cousin who is either in prison or has experienced incarceration at some point in their lives. And it gets worse. She says that not only do we have to understand the scope of the problem, we actually have to do something. So with all these people who are saying, let's cut out the rhetoric, we need to do something, she says we really need to organize a grassroots organization that will actually try to change the system. It's nice to do things that sound good and to try to change an individual because we think blacks are inherently criminal anyway, so if we can do something with that person, we feel good about ourselves. But that's not the scope of the problem. It is systemic. And it grows out of racism. But I want to share with you tonight the other person who has really awakened me to a great extent as I look back and try to really understand where we're at, what is the status of African Americans in this country. And some of you might know him. His name is Philip Jackson. He's the director of the Black Star Project USA, which is located in Chicago. And it's an organization that's devoted to educational excellence and also devoted to the empowerment of black males, which is part of the new Social Justice Center. And he's written a number of articles on the subject, but I call attention tonight to one of them, which I hope all of you will read. The title is, With No More Cotton to Pick, What Will America Do with 40 Million Black People? And what he's saying is that if you look historically, this country has robbed African Americans of their labor, have tried to get everything they possibly can out of them for free, or at low cost. We've gone through enslavement, we've gone through Jim Crow, and now he says, America is tired of black folks. They don't need them anymore. They don't need their limited skills and their labor anymore. So where does that leave them? That's a very important question. He also looks at what has resulted from that. It says that America is now getting out of the black people business. 57% of black men are not working in Detroit. 56% of black men are not working in Buffalo. 55% of black men are not working in Milwaukee. And he goes on and on, and he mentions all of these cities. And in New York City, up until recently, something like 75% of the African-American males between the ages of 16 and 24 were unemployed. That spells disaster. And he asked the question, what will America do with 40 million black Americans now that there is no cotton to pick? The other thing he looks at is the educational system, and I was happy to see a couple of the speakers talk about the educational system. And he basically says, we are not educating our children and people to live in a new world. It's a global economy out there. And he talks about STEM, S-T-E-M-M. He says, which stands for science, technology, engineering, math, medicine. Did I get them all? Yeah. And he says, it's not enough to just work on a problem that I think we've all been working on. When we find out that in some cities, something like 50% of the black kids do not graduate from school. And now we're all engaged in figuring out how can we get them out of school. We're not talking about educating them, by the way. We're talking about how do we get them to graduate, whatever that means. But even in the prison system, they're only committed to an eighth grade education, providing an eighth grade education, and they're not teaching our kids. And even if you graduate from high school, which is nice, there are no jobs for you. You have difficulty getting a job with a bachelor's. Okay, so where is that going to take us? We have a real problem. We have a serious problem. And we can't afford to simply talk about it any longer. We will be destroyed. He does make some recommendations, which I'd like to mention, which might help our discussion if we're going to have one. He says that if black America is to survive, and he says, in parentheses, there's no assurance. He has five keys to fixing our economic and the social problems, all the things that we've been talking about here tonight. And the first one, which I was happy to see hear you talk about, he says we have to rebuild the black family. That all of the problems stem from families that are in turmoil. Everything, including education and all of it, it goes back to the family. He says, this time, however, they will not be allowed to even pick cotton because there's no more cotton for black Americans to pick. We've got to educate them. The second thing he said is, we have to provide black boys with strong, positive black men and mentors. And that, he said, is a must. Kids do what they see people do. We can't blame our kids because they do certain things. That's what they see. Parents are very important. They determine what this child is going to become. So stop blaming the children, okay? We have got to look at ourselves as parents. He also said, the third thing he says is that we have to control the negative peer culture and electronic media that mold many of the black boys. There is so much that kids get from somewhere else if parents are not there. And he's saying we've got to pay attention to what they're really getting, because it's not building good, strong men. The fourth thing it says, again, he goes back to the stem. He says, we'd rather understand for the rest of our existence, from now on, black people will live in a different world. And it's true. It's not the same. We don't pick cotton anymore. We've got to be able to get out there and deal in the businesses, all the different economies that are growing up, know the technology, or we'll be left totally behind, because that's the reality. And the fifth thing he says is that we must, and someone spoke to this, control our economic fate by mastering the principles of entrepreneurship, business, management, finance, accounting, and all of those areas that will help us to shrink the economic gap that exists in our country. And the sad thing he notices, as I mentioned before, we've had no real black response to what he sees happening in our country. We do talk about it. Some of our organizations don't even acknowledge it. We don't have the kind of excitement and force that we did during the civil rights movement to really change what's happening to us. There's a sixth thing that I would add to his five key things, and that someone spoke already, again, on racism. Unfortunately, it's part of our existence in this country and has been since we've been here. But we can't let it get us down. We've got to understand it, know how it works. We have to understand the barriers that it places in front of us, and then we learn how to deal with it. Because I don't think it's going away anytime soon. But it's a powerful force. And so when people said, don't talk about racism because it's over and done with, or it's not that important, every day of my life, I see how important it is, not only for me, but for everyone. So we can't ignore it. I think that the Stanley B. Keith Social Justice Center can be an powerful force for change in the Hudson area community. I have been involved in founding a number of programs and organizations, and of course the one that I spent the most time and feel that we've made the most progress through is the Center for Law and Justice. And we have been of late focusing on the disparity and the racism in the system, and I won't go into all that because we've already talked about it, but one of the things I'm trying to do is to get the rest of the state, at least, to look at what the impact of all of this has been on people of color, African Americans and Latinos. So what we've done of late is to draft a petition that we will send to the governor to form a truth, justice, and reconciliation commission that will actually listen to people and come up with some recommendations and actions that will really deal with all the people who have been harmed by this policy of mass incarceration in this state. So if you're interested in signing on that, you look at our website, Center for Law and Justice. .org. Okay, thanks. I never remember those things. My granddaughters have to teach me how to use my phone. But anyways, I think that here in Hudson, with all the bad news, I think there's some good news. Yeah. The good news I've heard from all these incredible people who have stood up here and given you a sense of what's going on in this community and what you need to do. That's the first step. And I think if you work with the center, that you will definitely see that the rest of the people in the community will take notice, and hopefully they'll be forced to join me in looking at our systems and how they need to change. And the other thing is, I think you've got an incredible leader here, leaders actually. I met Quentin, I think a few months ago, and I couldn't understand why everybody was saying, you gotta meet this guy, and he's so wonderful, they were singing his praises all night. And now I know, because his commitment is genuine, and he has a leadership ability, so I think that's gonna be one of the things that's gonna be most helpful. The other thing is, I think also the entire board is really impressive. And I think they're going to, of course, add a great deal to the success of the program. I'm very impressed with the mission. Missions are very important. I think they've crafted it, they stated it correctly, and we really need to keep it in front of us as we go along. Because what happens in some organizations is that they have a mission statement and then somehow or other it gets lost. And we start doing a whole bunch of things that have nothing to do with our mission. And that can be a kiss of death. So you've got a good mission, you've got good leadership, and I think that's going to really take you far as we look to change a system. I would also suggest that there is, it's important to collaborate with a lot of the other organizations and groups that are committed to the same mission. We at the Center for Law and Justice would be honored to work with you in whatever way that we possibly can. So think about that. I mentioned that we had the African American Cultural Center, which has just been formed, and they want to include everybody from this area, so that's another way to get involved, because we can share information, we can share resources if need be. All those things can be helpful if you collaborate. You also need to understand there's a lot of work being done on the new Jim Crow movement. We have a movement up in Albany. They're forming movements in various cities across the Mid-Hudson area. There's one in New York City. And they're thinking about how they can come together and have a whole statewide organization to fight the Jim Crow that we see in existence today. So there are many, many things that are going on. And hopefully, you can check out some of the stuff on our website and be involved in working with other groups so that we can really make some progress here in dealing with the issues that I've just mentioned. I know we don't have much time, so I want to leave time for us to have the discussion. I don't know what happens now, but you're going to do that? Okay, so I want to leave time for discussion. So I'm sorry I had to cut it short, but I think in the interest of time, and also I'm very anxious to engage in some kind of a dialogue with you as well. So thank you for inviting me, and I wish you well.